of the political acts, and we generally want a pretty good members of the management. Goodrich, as part of his duties, he wrote the first rules for practice in the state, and he was the first judge to hear any cases. He was the he came to Minnesota shortly after the territory was created, along with everybody else. He stayed in this this hotel that consisted of a log cabin, and he complained that his room didn't have a chair. And he said that the chinks between the logs were bigger than his windows. So that was his lodging when he first came here, and that was where the Minnesota Supreme Court first held a session, in his little log cabin hotel room. Goodrich came from I think Pennsylvania originally, and he was a good member of the Whig Party, which is how he got appointed. He went to Tennessee, became a lawyer there, and was elected to the Tennessee legislature, and he got people's eye in the Whig Party, and he was offered this this position as Chief Justice of the new Minnesota Territorial Supreme Court. So when you think of the Chief Justice as this dignified man, one visitor to the area described him instead as a strange, comical-looking character, carrying his thumbs in the armholes, a not over-clean white waistcoat, and with a tall black hat perched on the back of his head, perambulating thoughtfully up and down. So he's, you have these interesting characters out here on the territory. Despite his personal characteristics, it sounds like he was probably, like I say, a pretty good judge. The first court session in the state, or in the territory, took place in Stillwater. So he was sitting there as the district judge. He got there, and apparently there were a lot of lawyers who had made their way west to seek their fortune here, because it was either he or somebody else who described it, that there were lawyers from every state in the union in Stillwater when he got there. And there were quite a few cases, I think it was like 70 cases or something on the calendar when he got there. Despite all these cases on the calendar, none of them, or very few of them, were ready for trial. So one of his first actions as judge was to admonish everybody that the next day he came to town, when a case was called for trial, it was going to be tried that day. You know, we're not going to be continuing this, because despite all these lawyers running around every state of the union, they didn't have any of their cases ready for trial, much to his consternation, apparently. Again, Goodrich was removed, and despite kind of a pretty good constitutional argument that the president didn't have the authority to remove him after he was appointed for a term of years, he was removed, and since the Treasury agreed with him, he didn't fight it anymore. He has kind of that description from his visitor. He's kind of a colorful character. Apparently, he kind of got on a fair number of people's nerves. Like I say, he started out at this hotel that was made out of a log cabin. And then shortly thereafter, Henry Moore Rice, the fur trader, opened the first proper hotel in St. Paul. I think it was called the American House. It was a better class of hotel, and Goodrich was living there. Apparently, the landlady, the person that Rice brought in to manage the place, apparently Rice was always on her case, complaining about the job she was doing, and Goodrich apparently thought this was unwarranted, so he stood up for her, and he was quite often at odds with Rice over the treatment of this landlady, and the early newspapers were picked up on this, and they had reported all kinds of scandal from it. So he learned that the new city of St. Paul was a little village, although he did have a fair amount of support, not only within his own Whig party, but Sibley, who was a Democrat, did actually go to bat for him in Washington and probably delayed his removal from office. And that probably has something to do with why Fuller, his replacement, was not confirmed by the Senate and was sent packing. So the other Chief Justices, Hayner and Welch, not named to you hear too much about. We have about 15 minutes left. I will pause right now in case you have any questions. And then otherwise we can kind of run through some of the little bit more biographical videos. Yes, and there is also a coffee back there, so if anybody would like some about yourself. But any questions?
Yeah, actually, I do have a question. Wisconsin, when it became a state, the legislature essentially copied wholesale from New York statutes. And there are Wisconsin cases as recent as 20 years ago where they talk about using New York precedent as authority for interpreting some of the statutes. And they still do. Did Minnesota do something like that? Take another state?
I'm not sure. I suspect it probably was. One of these people that I'm going to mention, I forget who it is right now. One of these early chief justices, the one who got a county named after him, I forget which one. But one of those judges, he didn't serve as a judge after statehood. But one of his positions was the, I don't think it was called revisor of statutes at the time, but he was like in charge of the commission that wrote the statutes. Which sounds like kind of a daunting task to write every last statute. So yeah, I suspect there was a great deal of that, and probably a lot of it from the existing territorial statutes at that time. So it was the revision where other states were copying was probably in the territorial statutes. But I'm just speculating on that.
I haven't seen anything in Minnesota decisions that I've come across like I had in Wisconsin.
Okay.
But, you know, there are occasional references. So just another little comment about older cases. I had a case a year or so ago involving a foreclosure issue, and the key decision there was decided in 1861, whereas the district court judge said when Fort Sumter was being fired on.
Yeah.
And
sometimes the old cases are the ones. One thing I like to do when you don't say this is the only case, put it in your spring studies, is in the library there's this book called The Empire Digest, which are the British cases. And then you look at there, you usually find any topic that you want, and they're written so obtusely that you can't quite tell what they're saying anyway. But you find this case from 1600, and if you look long enough, you're going to find some language that supports what you're saying. So old cases are it's good to say, but not as a steady diet. I'll just talk a little bit about some of these early figures. Like I mentioned him before, one of the main characters in early history in the state, not just legal history, was Sibley. He was a fur trader. He came here in the 1820s, and he did become the first governor of the state. But when you think somebody is a fur trader living out on the frontier, you think of this mountain man or something. But I mean, he was a very educated man, and I think a very astute lawyer. In the materials here, I have links. If you want more information on some of these people, these are just kind of starting points if you want to read a little something about them. It's not by no means exhaustive, but just kind of to give you a little snippet of some of these. So you can take a look at those if you're interested. But his father was the Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court, and he came out here in the 1830s.